oral history recording on the 12th of May 2014 with Elizabeth Wells, archivist, and
Nader Christie, whose husband was Master of the Queen's Scholars, and the dates, I can't remember the dates, I'm bad on dates, but just after the war. He had been, when we married, he was a beat at Eton, and then one day, as a boy, he'd been a scholar at Westminster, but after the first year, they were evacuated away to Hereford. Mm-hmm. But we were at Eton, he was making a house list, and then John Carlton, who'd just been appointed headmaster at Westminster and was a bachelor, asked could he come to lunch, and we knew him. And he said, would Henry come back there as Master of the Queen's Scholars and the Undermaster? So we went back to Westminster. And the date must have been about 1958, something like that, because yes, my three eldest children had all been born, and then my last daughter was born in Westminster in 1960. And so we went into number three, which was this lovely house in Little Dean's Yard. And all round the yard, there was the John Wilson and his family, Frank Kilvington and his family, Steve Rushington and his family. So there were a lot of children of the same age, but they weren't allowed to play in the yard. But you never knew whether you were going to have three children for tea or eight. They all ran around in a very happy gang together. And because scholars ate in College Hall, we didn't have a house dining room. So my husband would be eating with the boys. I mean, he had breakfast and supper at home, but there wasn't, as in the other houses, with boys eating in the house with the housemaster and his wife. So I didn't see as much of the boys as the other housemaster's wives. I sort of got to know our own, yes. And they were charming, all of them. And it was very interesting. It was a very happy time. The only thing I can offer you is something that has a slightly different view, was that while I was there, we had two royal weddings and the Queen visiting for the special celebrations. And for the weddings, they had a full rehearsal or the day before, or 2 days before, everything. And I was the Queen, and Jane Kilvington was the bride. And we went through everything and sat in the Queen's stall and so on. And then just towards the end of the rehearsal in the Abbey, a group came in, lovely, lovely, happy family group with the Queen and the Duke and Princess Margaret and Queen Mum and Anthony Armstrong Jones. And it was such just like any family before the day of the wedding. Then later, when they met, they filmed the wedding. And in the film, most of the camera work on the Queen was when either during the national anthem or during a prayer or something, and she was quite rightly looking solemn. And I remember some dear lady saying to me, oh, you could tell the Queen didn't approve of the wedding. I said, all I can tell you is that the night before, she and Armstrong Jones were the centre of a very happy family gathering, and it was lovely. Then the next wedding was Princess Alexandra, and there, the thing I remember about that was that we were all sitting, waiting, and the fanfare came to show that she'd arrived at the Great West door, and Ogilvy, what was his name? Anyway, Mr. Ogilvy, who was standing at the altar with his best man facing the altar, stepped out into the middle of the aisle, turned his back on the altar, and just watched his bride all the way up it was so romantic. It was lovely. It was a lovely moment. When the Queen came for the special festivities, which was lovely, we, in number three, as you walked in, straight opposite was a small cloakroom with a big mahogany Victorian lavatory. And Denny Brock, who was another housemaster and who had been at Westminster with my husband, had just inherited a huge portrait of Queen Victoria, enormous, in a heavy gold frame, signed by Queen Victoria, because his ancestor, you know it, Admiral Somers Brock, had presented, he'd been on the Royal Yacht, I think. Mm. And then he said, could you possibly put it on that blank wall. So we did. And that cloakroom was always known as Victoria and Albert because there was just this mahogany laboratory and the portrait. And then just before the Queen's visit, Humphrey Carruthers, the bursar, came very slightly embarrassed. And I'm terribly sorry, but we're going to offer this as the cloakroom for the Queen, should she need one. And we'll repaint it, you know, do the whites all over again. But do you mind if we move the portrait of Queen Victoria out? We don't think the Queen would like to see the portrait, signed portrait in the laboratory. So that was out came Victoria. She went back again. Otherwise, it was a very, very happy time. What do you want, anything you want me to ask? Ask me about.
Can we go backwards a bit?
Yes, indeed.
Because what I don't know is much about your life. When the record records people, I mean, all we get is that, that you were the daughter...
Before Westminster
of,
or...
Well, I know you were the daughter of a schoolmaster. Where did your...
My father was a headmaster in Derbyshire,
In Derbyshire, okay.
And then I was totally state-educated from mixed infant, grammar school, university. But then when the time came for university, I was doing applying for English at Cambridge. I got a place, but by that time, if you're going to do English, you could only go for 2 years or risk coming back later. Mm. And I didn't want to do all that for just 2 years. So I deferred my entry and went into the Wrens, where I was there, and I was posted to Bletchley, so I never saw the sea until after D-Day. We were sent to Colombo to do the same job there. And while we were there, of course, the atom bomb dropped, which my family are ashamed to hear me say it was the best thing that ever happened, because the Japanese would never have given in and there would have been 7 years of war. As it was, suddenly it was peace, and so back I came to Cambridge. And there at Cambridge, I met my husband, who he'd been RNVR in the war, and we met, and by the time we'd finished Cambridge, we were engaged. And he went to teach at Eton. I went to teach for a year in a girls' boarding school. And then we married. And then we were at Eton, happily, and had 3 children. And then one day John Carlton rang and said, could he come and have lunch? And when he came, he said, will you come back? I've been appointed headmaster. Will you come back to Westminster? Which, of course, was lovely for Henry.
He was keen to go back.
I will go as far as I'm concerned for my husband. He very much wanted it. I enjoyed it enormously too. We were very happy at Eton and we were making a house list. But people understood you go back to your own school as the deputy head. And so we did. And so we were there. Then had another daughter and... Then people started asking him to let his name go forward as headmaster for various schools. And after about 7 years, we went to Brighton. And then College.
Was it sad to leave Westminster? Did you feel...
Sad to leave... I was always sad to leave wherever we left, but luckily never regretted it because we always moved into a very happy community. And I have known friends who've left happy schools and then found they weren't as happy in the next one, which must be very sad. I was terribly lucky. It was a very happy life. And wives were much more involved then with... I think nowadays quite a lot of the wives, quite understandably, are working. Particularly if they haven't got in their house dining rooms and the catering and that sort of thing to organise. I remember an aunt of Henry's saying, Nada, what do you do all day? And I said, I don't know, Aunt Sylvia, but I spend 24 hours a day doing it. There was always something, the little boy who wanted some string or somebody who wanted something else. I remember the funny thing, boys don't tell their parents much. When, I think it was Princess Margaret's wedding, but two of the scholars, the senior ones, were to put the cushions down for Princess Margaret to kneel on. and they were full court dress and buckles and things. So it was great fun trying them on. And one of the boys' mothers phoned me about something the night before and said it would be looking. I said, well, on television, you watch out because you'll see him. But what's he doing? She said, I said, he's putting the cushion down for Princess Margaret. And she phoned me later and said, oh, it was wonderful. I phoned his grandmother and all his aunts, and then we suddenly saw him come forward with his knee breeches and his buckles. And he never mentioned it to us. We would never have noticed. But they were nice. I always put my Christmas pudding out for the boys to stir and wish, and they used to come in and out. We'd play games in the evening. So long ago now. I mean, I'm 90, and I was what? 30-something then. The wives did adopted refugees. Freda Prague, whose husband, she and her husband had been German refugees. And they're in touch with a charity where there were these displaced families who couldn't buy citizenship, so had to stay in a camp somewhere in Middle Europe. And so the Westminster wives, through Freda, we had bazaars, or we sewed cakes, or we made lots and lots of marmalade, which we sold to all the masters to raise money for this family. And we had, through Freda, who of course was German speaking, we had very touching letters saying, when they come round selling things at the camp, but we have no money, so we hide behind the door so that we can't see the lovely things, the lovely food that has been brought. So anyway, we sent them the money to buy their citizenship. But then they found that they both got TB, so weren't eligible for coming out of the camp. So then by that time I'd left Westminster, we'd gone to Brighton, I gather they stayed in the camp for the rest of their lives. They were both all in their 60s. So we did a lot of things together. Oh, we had a club, the Puddle Ducks, which the organist's wife, the Westminster Abbey organist's wife, oh, I've said bad on names, but you'll be able to find it. And they used to go to the little municipal baths in next door to Westminster School and swim and then have coffee once a week on Thursdays. And somehow the swimming part vanished, but we still had the Thursday coffee. And so Thursday coffee, there was always coffee, eventually in my house. And even if I wasn't there, someone else was there to give coffee. And we included, not just the wives, the school wives, but other secretaries, and a delightful lady, Mrs. Vaughan, who ran the shop. She had a photograph of the most devastatingly handsome young man, which was her son. And he had been a great runner. And he had harriers on his chest carrying the Olympic torch. And evidently it was just that year when the polio came. I think Armstrong Jones had it at Eton, and he had it. And he died. And a few months later, she got a letter from the harriers saying somebody had sent this photograph, saying what a wonderful photograph. And they were sure the young man would like to have a copy. And the harriers had this beautiful large version of it in a silver frame to present to her. They were all very much part of a family. We knew them all. And the other memories of being in college was our evening prayers were always in St. Faith's Chapel.
Did you go to all the services in the Abbey?
We could go to all the services. With children, we didn't. No. They were just at that age, you didn't take young children to the Abbey services. But the evening prayers, we used to go along, and we were let in because the Abbey was locked, and went into St. Faith's Chapel. I always think of the Abbey as that. It was at its best, this lovely candlelight and St. Faith's Chapel, and evening prayers. We all sang Compline, and it was just about 20-minute little service, and then just the boys and Henry and myself. So those were memories. What other memories? All the boys, I was trying to think. Lloyd Webber came in just our last year, was his first year. I think he's the most famous old boy. The others mostly became very distinguished civil servants. I'm so bad on names. One of them used to write Betty Boothroyd's speeches.
I interviewed Nicholas Bevan.
Yes, yes. Have you met him? Yes, yes. He's a charmer, isn't he?
He remembered you, of course.
Oh, did he? Yes. Oh, nice. And there was a boy called Louis Sherwood who actually became godfather to the daughter that we had while we were there. And he was head of school, head of everything, delightful. And his father had died or vanished, and his mother and the two boys. And so he then went out, he was sent to America. He was with a big firm, sort of the equivalent of Sainsbury's or something. And years later, when we were out in America for 2 years, he and his wife met again. And then he came back. He was a governor of Westminster School until he died, very young, actually. He was one of the ones we knew best. Isn't it awful? I forget name. Milner Gulland, I remember. And they always did house reviews, very, very little informal house review at the end of term. And they published a little house magazine. Well, Nicholas is now retired, is he?
Yes, of course.
I know he was. I loved Betty Boothroyd, and he said, well, I write her speeches. They asked me back to a club that college have, and someone was speaking. Would it be a Milner Gulland or something? His father was to do it. I'm sorry, I'm so bad at names. And so I went back for that one talk.
Mm.
But it wasn't easy getting to London and going there. But it was lovely meeting them all again. And then I met quite a lot of them. That's right, Oliver. When they were dedicating a sundial to Adolf Prague.
Mm.
And they asked me back for that, which was nice. And I saw a lot of them there. Some looking exactly the same. Nick hadn't changed much iconography. Others, you sort of automatically put some hair where the ball patch was. And it was very nice. I enjoyed it. I was so lucky. Now, how did I meet my husband? Well, at Cambridge. How did Westminster School differ from Eton? Not at all, really. The boys seemed exactly the same. What do you remember the Queen's visit? My irreverent memory of Victoria and Albert. How had things changed in Jonathan? Very little. When he went back in the things.
Was it a different experience being a parent of a pupil and no longer being sort of part of them?
Yes. Again, the snag was being... we were down at Brighton then. The snag was being... when Jonathan was playing in concerts or taking parts in plays, my husband usually couldn't get away from Brighton. No, there was something happening at Brighton. The Brighton governors were very understanding. They said, you know, your son comes first, it's only three or four. And things like Westminster didn't have a speech day, but Brighton, it was a very important thing. But it was a day, and then they were very kind if it clashed with something that Jonathan was doing. And Jonathan seemed very happy there. They had a great deal of freedom. You know, they could go out to concerts or cinemas and things, which I don't think many schools could do in those days. It was very happy.
Do you think the school had a different character through being in central London?
Yes. Games weren't so all important. I think a lot of... Vincent Square was the nearest playing field. My husband was a rowing man, so he was down at Putney. And when there was a house games and things, I would always be at Vincent Square watching the boys. And he was down at Westminster, at Putney, you know, rowing. I'm sorry, it's all very, you know, trivial, but it was a very, very happy time. It's interesting because, of course, Henry's Uncle John had been headmaster there. And Henry's mother, who was a Dyson, her brothers had both been at Westminster years before. And one of them had been a scholar, one had been up grants. It's interesting, you were in college, up grants.
Up school.
Up school, yes. And lovely Ashburnham House, which we had concerts and things in.
Did you? You had concerts?
Well, receptions, remember, piano things.
Yes.
And then, of course, when the new hall was built. It was very interesting there, you know the story of the ceiling of the new hall, the garland there. They decided the old Hammerbeam one had gone, so they would put a new one, which they did, which was acoustically very good. But then the library, which had not Orlando Gibbons, the man who did moulded wreaths and things, they decided they would put back a replica of that. But where on earth would they find anyone to do all these lovely things? And they said, go to the film studios. They're doing it all the time. So via the film studios, I mean, this is a story I was told. They put this back. But while it was open to the air, because it was bombed during the war, a black cap redstart nested. And so at each end of the garland, there is a bird. That was the only difference from the original the swag. They put the bird in the thing. So that was fun.
Was there, I mean, I suppose a lot of the building work had been done by the time you...
By the time we went back, yes, a lot of the building work had been done. We're still, I mean, when we first went there, the holidays, everything stopped. The boiler, so there was no hot water. The dustmen didn't come. So you had to find, that was when we got this cottage in Cornwall, you had to find somewhere to go. And it was very funny, when we moved, I wrote to the removal firm. We got a London firm because we thought if we were going from Eton to London, if anything goes wrong, we'd be near the firm. And I wrote to them and said, access is very difficult. The only way in is through Little Dean's Yard, which has a small arched entry. And you cannot get car through. Anyway, there we were with some removal men come, and there's a lot of sort of and finally they said, can we make a phone call? And they phoned their firm, and a sort of dapper man came, very smart, and they said to him, we can't get you know, all this furniture, we can't get it through. And he came and said, I'm afraid we'll have to increase the charge because we didn't know. And he got a folder and I saw my handwriting on a letter and I said, just read that letter to me. And I was saying, you'll find access very difficult. There is only a very small archway through Little Dean's Yard. There is no back entrance. You have to manhandle everything across Little Dean's Yard. Oh, he says. Then they borrowed the rickety trolley that the dustbin men always used, because the dustbin men had to come through the front door, go through the kitchen, take the dustbins, carry them out, put them on the trolley and take them back across. And so all our furniture was carried, and all the books. They said, oh, it's a schoolmaster, books. All had to come on the little rickety trolley across the Lean Shop.
Was it a comfortable house to live in with the family?
I loved it, yes. It was Georgian, and it had lots of rooms. Of course, it was just after the war, so they did redecorate the drawing room for us. Of course, John Carlton had been living in it because he'd been Master of the Scholars, so the living things were good. Everything was a bit shabby, but gradually they redid everything. They'd done, for John Carlton, they'd done the drawing room and the vital things. But the upper bedrooms, you know, the children's rooms and so on, eventually got painted and done. Now what else? Have I said anything useful?
Yes, got a lot of useful things actually that I've not heard before. Was it a hard job for your husband? Because now we have those roles as two separate roles, under master and master of the scholars.
No, he loved it. No. I mean, he had to attend Abbey services. He'd got his Uncle John's red cassock.
Oh, really? It was just handed down. That's convenient.
And they were both tall. No, he loved it. He. You didn't see much. I mean, we saw one another at breakfast and supper if we hadn't got people coming to dinner. But you didn't see much of him. He was either teaching or being busy in college. They had a very... It was just a very happy community. And we still have reunions, as you know, I think. The moment they all come to Oxford, because we used to go out to various... We found ourselves going to Shropshire and St Albans, but the far-flung people very kindly said, look, Oxford's in the middle. But we're getting fewer and fewer. It's like a Scottish tontine. Now, what else? Dean Abbott was a dear. Well, Dean Don was a dear. And the Stancliffes, who's a canon, they used to have Scottish dancing in their house.
And
we used to go and do Scottish dancing. And I remember Henry and I were going across, walking across Little Dean's yard, and Dean Don was coming. Where are you two off to? So he said, well, Scottish dancing. Ooh, he said, I'd love to come. He was a great Scot. So he came, and he said, we're doing eightsomes and things. Oh, you must do foursomes. He taught us how to do a foursome. And we always used to meet at the Stancliffes for Scottish dancing there.
Did they have one of those houses in the little cloister?
Yes. No, they were in Dean's Yard. As you come into Dean's Yard, just before you turn left into Little Dean's Yard, that house was theirs.
Oh, right.
And Little's was somewhere part of the back of it or something. And the carpenters, Lillian Carpenter, Edward Carpenter, who was a canon, and Lillian was an unusual woman. She had her little prayer mat and was great, spiritually very rich and great fun. When we did the Puddle Ducks, the story was that when they did the Serpentine one, she suddenly said, yes, yes, and took off her dress and swam in her knickers and bra, which nowadays would be nothing, but in those days it was quite nothing. But I remember she didn't believe in smacking children or anything. And just before Charlotte was born, I had a sort of scare, and they said, stay in bed. And she came to visit me in tears one evening, and I said, Lillian, what is it? I've smacked Paul. Paul was her youngest child. There was Louise, who was younger, the little girl, who was the same age as my daughters later. And I said, oh, Lord. Well, she said, he was naughty and I smacked him. And he looked at me and said, do you think Jesus would like a big woman like you to hit a little boy like you? Oh, he was so right, Neda, he was so right. They were a lovely family. When she took us round the Abbey, she was wonderful. We started, in the evening it was, at the tomb, Edward's tomb. And you know, it's that lovely Gothic gloom and things. And she said, now here is the heart of the Abbey. Now imagine little Joanna, the king's daughter, peering round at all those Flemish men putting in those windows. She personalised the whole of the Abbey and gradually moved on. She was a great lady. What else?
Were there Latin plays when you...
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so. And you could see that the children could watch them from their bedroom windows. They were great fun. Theo Zinn produced them. And they were a great feature, yes. And ordinary plays. And concerts. I remember one school concert. Sir Adrian Bolt, who was the old boy, they, I think it was the special centenary year, they said, would he come as a guest conductor? And he said, on condition you let me sing in the choir for the end, because they were doing, at the end, they were going to do like prom, Rule Britannia, and, you know, Land of Hope and Glory. So he came. I remember he said, when he was having tea with us, my doctor says I mustn't have liquid and solid at the same time. I've got to make up my mind whether I have that lovely cup of tea or that lovely cake, which I can't have both. He was so upright and vigorous. And a nice Lady Bolt came with him. Who else? Oh, Alan Paton and Trevor Huddleston came. My sister was married to South African and knew them out in South Africa. So when they were over, they came and visited us. And he was doing the life of David Livingstone. And I said, well, his tomb's in the Abbey there. And he said, you know, it's the most extraordinary thing, because when he was dead, the tribe he was with, there's a taboo about touching dead bodies. Mm-hmm. But they brought it all the way back to England, but weren't allowed in the Abbey for the funeral. So I said, well, you go and look at the tomb. On the tomb, it says, brought by loving hands. Mm. So that was very interesting. Who else did we have?
Do you remember Lawrence Turner at all?
Who?
Lawrence Turner.
I met him, and as he was a great archivist. And yes, I met him when, you know, with drinks parties and things, but I never actually had any contact with him. I think he knew who I was and I knew who he was. Who's the... Are you the archivist now? So are you Lawrence Turner?
Well, I'm the archivist at the school, but yes, there's somebody who's really, I suppose, the new Lawrence Turner, who's the archivist at the Abbey, the keeper of the monuments.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes.
His name's
yes.
Matthew Payne.
Ah, yeah. There's a very happy relationship between the Abbey and the school. I mean, you know, way back, evidently, there was some great feeling. But and Dean Don was very much part of the school, and so was Dean Eric Abbott when he succeeded Dean Don. And Lillian ran a Sunday school for the children in her house.
And there were never... Well, I was. Yeah, that's a good point. What school did your children go to when you were living?
Well, there was a little school called Mrs. Ingham's School, just round, you go towards Vincent Square. And all the children went there, boys and girls. And then the girls... Well, my eldest daughter went to Putney High, but that would be when she was 11. Frances Holland, and then she took everything. And Deborah had just started Frances Holland as we left. Charlotte wasn't born. Jonathan went to the one Prince Charles went to, Major, and wore little brown corduroy trousers, and Prince Charles was there later as a boy. And they all went, most of the boys went out. We took it in turns, escorting the children, walking them there, walking them back. And then Jonathan went off to prep school. He went, because he was coming back to Westminster, we thought he'd better go away for a bit. And he went to my husband's old prep school, Cambrai, in Bromley. And he was there when we left. We had left Westminster by the time he came. It seemed a good thing for him to have a break and not sort of know all the bastards by too well. No, he did a lot of music at Westminster. There was a lot of music. He wasn't much of a games player. He enjoyed it. He mostly tennis. The Westminster form of tennis, and he played his trumpet. Yeah, that's about all. Was there anything? Meals we had, the college, the school kitchen sent over lunch for us.
Oh, really?
And all the houses who somehow, and you saw people carrying trays of food through the long cloisters and so on.
And you were saying before we started recording that you weren't allowed as a woman to go and eat
in college hall.
No.
I think that still obtains. I'm not sure. And I don't think it was because John Carlton was a bachelor. No, because he was certainly not against women at all. But it just was college. The monks had said no women. At least that was what I was told. But it would have been difficult with children anyway. Mm. And as I said, going to the Abbey on Sunday. We took our children off to Chelsea or somewhere. Mm. And
was the food good?
Mm?
Was the food nice?
Well, as school food post-war was, yes. I mean, it's terribly difficult for them. No, it was good, solid, usual. And Celia Bird, who was in charge of the food, was so clever. She realised... which I'm afraid I introduced to other schools after we moved on, that it's, if you knew Monday was sausage and mash day and Tuesday was beef and something day and Wednesday was this day, and it never changed. She just, instead of having 7 menus, she had 8 menus. So you didn't know, oh, it's going to be corned beef day. No, she did wonders. How she managed, I don't know. She did wonders. It wasn't easy for them.
And the other thing I did want to ask you is, did your husband, did he talk to you about his experience at the school during the war?
They were evacuated out first to Lancy, I think, and then they went to Hereford. Oh, I knew the name until you asked me. And John Carlton had a lovely story about that. He and Walter Hamilton went round and round. They'd got a place in the Lake District, and then, when they knew war was coming, they would have to evacuate. And then just at the last minute, it was commandeered for War Office or somebody. So at the last minute, they were trying to find a place big enough to take the school. And so when they first went down to Hereford, Preedy, one of the masters, had suggested that it was his part of the world, and they saw 3 houses within walking distance, but they thought no, that's no good. And then they tried all sorts of places, and then after failing miserably, by the end of the day they were saying, well, that third house, there was only a tree growing through the dining room, there was nothing else wrong. So they did go there, and they had 3 houses, and the boys cycled or walked to where the lessons were.
Mm.
And they, Robin Denniston, who was a publisher, he and Henry were there at the same time, and Denny Brock, and Roger Young, who actually married my husband's sister, so it was a big Westminster gathering. But the people who'd been... Oh, it's absurd, I can't remember that name, but you'll know where it was,
Bromyard,
yes.
Bromyard.
And Whitbourne, I think, was where they were, but it was... They presented an ombre to the church to commemorate the fact that they'd been there. And we went... This was, I suppose, in the 60s. And we went down there, and there were dear ladies there who remembered them as boys, saying, oh, yes, I remember you. And particularly my brother-in-law, Roger Young, who he was a great games player. He was coming back from a match in a coach or something, and the driver's brakes went, and they had a tremendous crash, and he had a very badly damaged leg, I think. But they remembered him as the boy who... He learnt plumb. And David Simpson was his housemaster, and Dorothy Simpson, who was godmother to one of our daughters, said, she remembers someone saying, "Where's the house master?" And she said, "Well, he's in the moat digging out the ditch." Or else the boys used to grow vegetables, and Henry learnt to do plumbing and electric wiring as a boy, which was very useful. John Carlton he loved Westminster, and his knowledge of Westminster. Did you meet him at all?
No.
His knowledge of Westminster was splendid. Now, what else can I tell you? There was a school doctor, a nice school doctor we had.
Were there matrons in the different?
Oh, matrons, yes. Our matron was Nita Hillary. Now, her husband, I think, had been a master or something, but he was killed in the war, and she came back as matron. She had been a matron when they evacuated, and she came back, and she lived at the other end of college. There was a sort of matron's flat there. And she knew a great deal, a very tall, elegant lady. And she had a son and a daughter. They've grown up. And each house had its own matron. And I'm trying to remember. There was a Sam, yes, there was a Sam somewhere near Rigo's, I think. or each house had a sound room. I remember when we had a flu epidemic, and wives sort of went in helping. And some nurses were coming in, and there was... Went in once, and there was a young, gorgeous Australian nurse throwing wet tea leaves all over the wall and on the floor and saying, "You have to do this to allay the dust." I said, "Look, there's no, don't have to, an awful mess of tea leaves on the wall." She didn't last long. She was only, a temporary help. Mostly we were there, If we've got any wrapping paper for my mother's present or... sad boys who had sad news from her. You were there for them. No, I think that's all. It was a lovely place to be. You were right in the middle of London, and all you could hear was the Big Ben. You never noticed Big Ben until one time you suddenly thought, it hasn't struck. And a painter had left something hanging on one of the arms, a can, and it hadn't moved, so it hadn't struck, and everybody noticed that Big Ben hadn't struck. And Adolf Prague, who loved clocks, he said, "It's wrong, we can't see Big Ben, we can't hear it," and he put up that clock over the archway as you come in.
Oh really?
On condition that nobody knew he'd presented it. He was very generous, but he didn't want people to know. And so later, when they did that lovely sundial in his honour, they, instead of having, the sun, the high spot of the summer, the low spot of the winter, they had Adolf's birthday and Freda's birthday as the marks on it. And their sons were there. I remember one of their sons was a cox and the other was a rowing. And Freda said, they were day boys, because they lived in Dean's yard. "For one boy, he has to have a lot to eat, and for the other boy, he must not eat. He mustn't get any heavier if he's going to be a cox." So I think that's all I can tell you.
That's been wonderful. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope it's useful, but I'd be very interested to will you be producing copies of the
yes.
things?
Yes, I'll explain. I'll stop this and I'll explain.